We'll come to order. First on the agenda today is Senate File 734, authored by Senator Pretner Solon, Innovation in Nursing Education Demonstration Grant Program.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. This proposal is intended to solve two problems, one that most people are aware of and one that we think you should be aware of. The first problem is the shortage of nurses, which is expected to become acute in the not-too-distant future. And the second issue is the need for a better method to ensure student mastery of the skills that nurses will need in their careers. The success of the health system in reducing patient stays is having a negative impact on the ability of nursing students to have thorough clinical experiences. To address these challenges, two schools have come up with an idea that I think has merit: building a new way to educate nurses through a greater use of technology. St. Catharines and St. Scholastica have identified two inefficiencies in the way that nurses are educated, and they have identified the means to improve current practice. They believe that a greater use of technology in teaching and learning can allow nursing faculty to be more effective and more efficient in their teaching. They propose to completely re-engineer their nursing education programs to take advantage of available teaching and learning technology. This proposal has significant public benefits. The two schools, which already graduate 1/4 of the state's baccalaureate nursing graduates, aim to graduate 10% more nurses each year without hiring additional faculty. Also, because nursing students will receive more clinical experience while on campus, the schools will have graduates that are more ready to assume caregiver responsibilities in their first jobs. This should reduce job-related stress on first-year nurses and relieve healthcare providers of some of the education burden they now have. The schools intend to test whether they can reduce the time that students spend at clinical sites. If successful, this may relieve pressure on medical education resources in the future. The proposal is meant as a demonstration project, meaning that a review committee of their peers will provide guidance and evaluate their work. The two schools are very qualified to undertake this type of project. St. Scholastica has healthcare programs from baccalaureate through PhD and specifically tailors their programs to prepare nurses to serve in rural settings. St. Catherine has programs ranging from associate degree through PhD, and they are very experienced at providing education to a culturally diverse population of women. They host one of the most financially and culturally diverse student bodies in the state. While it's a tough budget year for new ideas, this project has merit and does seek an innovative way to address healthcare service needs. To present further details about the project, I have with me today Dr. Margaret McLaughlin, who is the Dean of Health Professions at the College of St. Scholastica, and Dr. Marty Wittrick, who is the Dean of Nursing at the St. Catherine.
I'm St. Catherine. Yeah.
And Dr. Marty Wittrick, who is Dean of Nursing at the College of St. Scholastica.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Senators, for the opportunity to speak with you this morning, and we will speak quickly. Added together, the two institutions have 200 years of experience in educating nurses in the state, and our respective founders have an even longer history of meeting the healthcare needs in the state. We believe this proposal is mission-centered. It reflects our commitment to the underserved, both in the patients that our graduates serve as well as our own students who come from underserved areas. Both institutions have considered it a moral imperative to address healthcare workforce needs in the state, especially with regard to the nursing workforce shortage, as well as recognizing the increasing burden that our educational models place upon our healthcare providers and the need to reduce that burden, as Senator Solon has already identified. We believe that this is a demonstration project, the model that will benefit the state as a whole and be available to other educational entities through its success. As Senator Solon mentioned, the traditional nurse education model is an apprenticeship model that required on-campus lectures, clinical experience, and after graduation, an education continued by a healthcare provider. This is a hugely labor-intensive model. Many systems today are questioning their ability to continue to support that model, And it's no longer remarkably effective given the nature of the acuity of the patient population that is in the acute care system today. It was developed for another time. The increased patient acuity has made it more difficult for novice students to diagnose and treat patients without additional staff oversight. Shorter patient stays and more service delivery at clinics result in inconsistent clinical experience for students. In the good old days, people came in the hospital and actually stayed there for a while. These days, you're lucky if you're in for 24 hours. Who you see in the morning is not the same person that you see in the evening. And as we've already mentioned a couple times, it's extremely burdensome to the acute care system. Too much time is required by staff to educate and oversee novice nurses as they enter into the system, so we need a much more effective way of bridging the gap between our educational model and what we're doing as students enter into the system. And as we've noted before and we'll say again, the coming shortage of nursing faculty and nursing staff can't be used in a way to address by simply expanding the existing system. We really have to fundamentally change the way we're doing our educational model.
So you might ask us, why technology? And that is because our practice partners have told us while they want more of our students and they want more of our graduates, they can't take additional burden for training them in their clinical sites. So we need to find new and different ways to ensure that our students have those skills, they have the knowledge, and that they can develop them in safe environments. As I've said over and over again, one of the last people you want by a cardiac arrest is a beginning student nurse. However, when they graduate and assume that role, they are responsible for taking care of that situation, and we need to find ways for them to practice in safe environments. We also need to re-engineer our nursing education to do this. We have a nursing education model that was really is not very different than it was when I went to school, which you can imagine was a while ago. So we need to develop new curricula, new learning environments, bring nursing education back on campus where we have capacity, use great technology that has been developed by other professions that also deal in high-risk environments like airplane pilots, and prepare our students better for this practice gap. We need more efficient, effective faculty members who are able to really narrow their scope, who are excellent teachers, but they may not have the top skill set when it gets into the clinical environment. We need to use those clinical settings as best we can. So, next one. This is just a little quick picture of some of the things that we're looking at. High-fidelity simulation in the upper left, which is also what is used to train airline pilots. Some of the informatics information that we have in the electronic medical record, and then some of the computer-based Second Life and other delivery models that allow students to practice in virtual environments some of the thinking skills that they need as well as the clinical skills.
And then finally, we have an assessment and evaluation plan. One of the huge benefits of being educators in the state of Minnesota is the collegial nature of our nurse educators throughout the state, the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Nursing. So our intent is to engage with our colleagues as we develop these models. As we've indicated, it's a demonstration project, so we want to validate it with our colleagues and be able to replicate it in the system. And as we develop and evaluate our outcomes, both short-term and long-term, short-term actually establishing the ability to do this work, and long-term being able to assess our student competencies and their ability to improve their learning through this methodology. We will share this experience and findings with the Minnesota nursing community as well as with our healthcare providers. And the sharing with the healthcare providers helps address the huge expense that they experience in trying to orient new nurses. So our intent is to reduce that gap and reduce that expense to our providers. Thank you.
So, Madam Chair, we're not asking for a general fund appropriation, but rather from the special revenue fund. And it would be $1,504,000 that would be divided equally between the two colleges. And this there currently is a $5.3 million fund balance attributable to the Board of Nursing. This will grow to $5.8 million in fiscal year 2011. The Board of Nursing has not taken a position on the proposal, but they have said that the money's paid to the state for nursing licensure should be spent in ways that benefit the nursing profession. And this appropriation would not affect the Board of Nursing operation in the future.
Are there questions? Senator Prettner-Solon, one of the things that we're trying to look into also is if there would be any stimulus money available for this project. I think if there is, we might prefer that source of funding. Sure. And if there is, we're not sure if it would be in this division or whether it would be in the higher education division. So I think when in the next few days, Senator Pappas and Senator Cohen and you and I need to have a conversation about that.
Okay.
Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. To the two deans from St. Catherine and St. Scholastica, is this one of the first opportunities you've had to collaborate and do a cooperative venture?
Well, no, we actually have a fairly long-standing partnership working together, sharing ideas. We've not ever shared money together before, but we think we probably play nice enough together that we could handle that.
Yeah. We do have a very long history. The sort of the Catholic culture around sharing helps too.
Any other questions?
Madam Chair, I'd just like to emphasize that this is really an innovative project that may be what we're looking for in terms of being able to educate more nurses more quickly and better prepare them for our future needs.
Madam Chair?
Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, because there's a lot of technology involved and things that I know that in at Bemidji State University, for example, one of the difficulties has been getting professors to teach nursing. There are a lot more applicants than there are nurses available, so we can't graduate as many students as we would like. Is there something that could come from this program that would be able to be shared with other colleges to reduce their teaching staff needs?
Absolutely. Thank you, Senator and Madam Chair and committee members. We believe that this project has the capacity to reduce the number of faculty needed to increase the number of students. Also, clinical placements have been very difficult both at Bemidji State and all around the state. And so we believe that by asking our colleagues and our peers to be evaluators for this project, that we would be able to share this with all schools of nursing as we go forward.
Any other questions? Senator Rosen?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, and when we find out if there are federal dollars available, could you share that with the committee? Because I'm sure all of us have some nursing program in our Senate districts of some kind that might.
Well, we think that there is some stimulus money available for programs connected to health through our universities, but we are still researching it. We know it's not, we don't think there's any available through the Department of Health, but we're still researching it, and so we will let you know.
Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to expand a little bit on what Dr. Wittrich was saying. The bill would have the two schools report to the Commissioner of Health, the Board of Nursing, and the Minnesota Association of Colleges of Nursing, MACN, as recipients of the report. And the two schools already have met with the board, and the board has shared their thoughts about going forward. They will continue to seek their advice as the project moves forward. And MACN consists of the leadership of every school of nursing in the state, MNSCU, the University of Minnesota, and nonprofit colleges. So St. Kate's and St. Scholastica are already well connected, and they'll continue to maintain that connection.
Any other questions? Okay, if not, we're just going to set this bill aside for now then.
Madam Chair, it will be heard today in higher ed just for an informational session.
Well, they actually can hear the bill.
Yes.
Because we don't have to go through the floor to transfer bills between divisions.
Yes.
So,
thank you.
All right, thank you. Senator Erickson-Ropes. And Senator, we'd like to focus on the fiscal part of this bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. Basically, the policy is just housekeeping anyway, so it's we went through that pretty thoroughly in the previous committee, and really it's just housekeeping stuff. The good news about this bill is it actually reduces the fees for the social worker licenses, and I have with me today Kate Zacherpate, and she's the executive director for the Board of Social Workers, and I'll have her tell you about the reduction.
Thank you, Senator Erickson-Ropes. Good morning, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm Kate Zacherpate, the executive director of the Minnesota Board of Social Work. And I would also just like to extend my thanks to Senator Erickson-Ropes for moving this bill today, and to Senators Coring and Prettner-Solin for co-sponsoring the bills. Thanks for the opportunity to testify on just the fiscal portion of Senate File 1154. As you know, the board is the health-related licensing board whose mission is to ensure public protection to the residents of Minnesota through the regulation of social work practice. As demonstrated by the fiscal note that you have before you, the Board of Social Work is not a general fund agency. All revenues are derived from fees, and they are maintained in the state's special revenue fund. The proposal that is in the bill is to maintain our current licensing fee rates and ask for an additional 10% reduction. This proposal is approved by the governor and included in the governor's budget. I've already testified before this committee on an informational basis as part of the governor's budget proposal, and I've also testified before Representative Clark's committee in the same capacity. This is a permanent fee reduction, and that is requested because Minnesota Statute 16A requires the board to reassess fees every 2 years when we plan the biennial budgets. The board's last fee increase was in 2001. Our current temporary fee decrease, which was enacted in 2005, sunsets this June 30th, 2006. And even with our current reduced fee rates that have been in effect since 2006, our revenues have exceeded expenditures. We've had a gradual increase of licensees. The board has made a commitment to streamlining and reducing expenditures, and we've had great success with our online services. The board's goal is to be fiscally responsible and to comply with state regulations to balance our revenues and our expenditures. And in conclusion, even with the reduced revenues resulting from this change item and this bill that we hope that you will approve, the board will still be able to meet its mandate of public protection. Our appropriation for fiscal year 10 and 11 is $921,000. If this bill is not approved, the board will be reverting back to the higher fee rates, and the revenues would be approximately $1,300,000, with our appropriation being $921,000, which is definitely an excess in revenues. With this additional 10% reduction, the revenues are estimated to be $959,000, which is much more in sync with our appropriations. Thank you for your consideration, and the board asks your support of Senate File 1154, and I'd be happy to take any questions from the committee.
Are there any questions? Senator Erickson-Ropes, then I think how I would like to proceed is I would like you to leave Article 3 here to be considered for the omnibus bill, but I'd like you to take all the rest of these pages out to the floor separately so that we don't have to have all of this in the omnibus bill. So perhaps we could get an amendment to do that.
Madam Chair, should I just do that orally?
That would be fine if...
Okay. I move retaining Article 3 for the Health Finance Committee and request permission to have the rest of the bill travel to the floor.
So I think that the motion needs to be that you move to delete Article 3 from the bill.
Okay.
And we'll keep it here.
Okay.
And we'll vote on that first, and then the motion to move the bill would be the second motion.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair. I move to delete Article 3 from this bill.
Any discussion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. All right, then, Senator Erickson Ropes, you can make a motion for your bill.
I would move Senate File 1154 be passed and advanced to the floor. As amended.
And be referred to the Finance Committee. Unfortunately, everything comes from here has to go to the Finance Committee
first. Correct.
Any further discussion on that motion? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Senator Erickson Ropes, I would recommend that you might want to talk with Senator Cohen about whether you could get a motion just to pull the bill to the floor.
Okay.
Since the financing sections have been removed.
Thank you very much, City members.
Thank you very much.
All right, next we'll take Senator Sharon, Senate File 224. Again, we're just focusing on the financing parts of the bill.
Thank you. Good morning. I am here to present Senate File 224, the non-emergency medical transportation bill. Very briefly, for context, the issues surrounding special transportation services and ATS services has been a concern over a long period of time. There's been a lot of shifts and change to how to manage this. This past fall, we had a work group of providers, consumers, DHS, the MNET get together and identify issues of concern to the special transportation system. And the next two bills that you are going to be hearing are proposals that are made to address some of the issues that were presented during that time, certainly not all of them, and there may need to be continued work. This particular bill focuses on issues that were raised at that time about how in the rural area deadhead miles are dealt with, dealing with the issue that the reimbursement methodology was creating difficulties in the rural area for providing special transportation services, and and as a result of that, we lost providers, or we would end up using more expensive forms of services like ambulance services for which were an unnecessary level of service for STS services. So it was suggested at that time we take a look at a system called RUCA, and this bill is a proposal to the legislature to change the way we reimburse STS services using what is called the RUCA system, and we'll describe that more clearly to you. Also in this bill is the elimination of the use of a broker in the 11-county metro area. But I want to be clear for those of you that haven't heard this bill before that the broker that we're talking about in this bill role is related to the ATS services, not the STS services. The special transportation services are those that are for persons who need assistance. Cannot get to the curb on their own, either because of a mental disorganization in their thinking process or physical disability. ATS services, a lower level of disability, and the person has more capacity to organize themselves and mobilize themselves. And this is a transport service that is for medical appointments only. So the bill talks about changing the methodology for reimbursing STS services, special transportation services, and the second part of the bill eliminates the broker who provides a organization and brokers rides for people who are getting ATS services. The Senator Berglund, I do have an amendment that I would like to make to the bill. I can do that at any time that you would recommend that I do that. It is the A6 amendment.
All right, well, let's get the amendment passed out.
As this is being passed out, let me explain that the A6 amendment is taking a section from Senator Lynch's bill and putting it in this bill, in addition to Senator Lynch's bill. It is a putting into statute the reimbursement rates for special access or ATS services, putting into statute what is already being applied. This does not change any rate or any level of reimbursement. It simply articulates in statute what the reimbursement rate currently is. And the reason that that is important is because in the fiscal note, as you'll note, there is reference to concerns from the counties in terms of what their increased costs would be. By putting into statute the rate of reimbursement for these services that is already calculated in the fiscal note, the providers of ATS services can bill directly DHS and for their services, and it doesn't, and it eliminates the responsibility, any responsibility at the county level. So I'd like to, if I may make a motion.
So does the department agree with you that this will not change the fiscal note on your bill?
In Senator Lynch's bill, there is language that indicates that this language, which is taken from her bill, will not impact the fiscal note.
Well, but she does have two full-time equivalents in her bill. Is that related to the budget, or is it not?
Senator Lynch's fiscal note. This is what it is.
Okay. Any further discussion on the amendment? Seeing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed? The amendment is adopted.
So just to walk quickly through the bill, Senate File 224 provides a rate increase for rural special transportation services. It eliminates the role of the broker to manage common carrier transportation services in the 11-county metro area. It clarifies language regarding medical transportation services and provides a rate increase for special transportation based on a geographic area classification system that's called the super rural, the rural urban commuting area. That's what RUCA stands for, rural urban commuting area. It's a geographical classification system. So that is in essence what the bill is about. I have persons here today, if you would like to hear from them, who can talk about, more clearly define what the RUCA system is, talk about the issue related to the loss of service that would be resolved by changing this methodology, and answer any questions you may have about eliminating the broker in the 11-county metro area.
Okay, we'll take very limited testimony. We want the testimony to be focused on the fiscal aspect of the bill. We'll start with Mike Pinsky.
Security committee members. My name is Mike Pinsky, and I've been a rural STS provider based in Mankato for 16 years. Committee members, the dynamics and economics of providing rural STS services are challenging. These challenges include serving large rural areas, limited volume, long-distance one-way trips, fuel prices, and, of course, deadhead miles. To begin, I currently serve an area larger than the 7-county metro area, yet with only obviously a fraction of the population. Due to this limited population, we cannot possibly have a vehicle stationed in every community. Therefore, we must constantly dispatch, coordinate our operations to serve multiple counties and dozens of cities. Due to these large rural areas serviced, we as rural providers experience a greater number of deadhead miles than our metro counterparts. For example, I have a dialysis patient that lives 26 miles away from the hospital in Mankato where she receives her dialysis treatments 3 days per week. since providers are only allowed to bill for loaded miles or when the recipient is actually in the vehicle. We travel great distances without reimbursement to get her to her dialysis. On this particular example, I travel a total of 104 miles per day, with only 52 of them reimbursed. As I mentioned, she receives her dialysis 3 days per week all year long. On an annual basis, we travel over 16,000 miles to get her to her dialysis, yet are only able to bill for 8,000 of those miles. We've been transporting her for nearly 4 years and has resulted in approximately 30,000 deadhead miles for just this one recipient. These challenges, namely the deadhead miles, have led to a reduction of rural STS providers. In fact, so far in 2009, we have lost two providers, one in Alexandria and one in Winnebago. As providers go away or merge with other providers, it places a greater burden on the remaining providers. This is why we need RUCA to address some of the challenges that are occurring for us as rural STS providers in the rural parts of the state. RUCA is a much more equitable way of reimbursing rural providers and is needed to preserve this service. Rural providers strongly support RUCA. RUCA only targets those transports that are rural or super rural and that have significant deadhead miles due to their rural nature. RUCA addresses many of the challenges currently faced by rural providers and allows providers to continue to operate in these rural parts of the state. I ask for your support on Senate File 224.
Are there any questions? If not, thank you. Buck McAlpin.
Madam Chair and members, Buck McAlpin, President, Minnesota Ambulance Association. Our concern as we continue to work with the non-emergency medical transportation industry, especially in rural Minnesota, it's a very integral part of our system. When these services are not available, they turn to ambulances to move these types of patients. And as Mr. Pinsky alluded to, the last ambulance-based special trans company, one that was in Detroit Lakes that serviced that corridor, closed in February this year, which was very alarming to us. He moved about 500 or 600 patients a month that the system has to try to absorb. So what I was tasked to work on this last summer was a formula that helped reimburse differently. RUCA, that Senator Sharon described, is one we use in the ambulance industry to recognize exactly what Mr. Pinsky discussed. The high amount of deadhead miles they have in rural Minnesota, 100-mile transports, we see it in the ambulance business back and forth too, where we haul somebody and we can only get billed for the transport, but still have to come all the way back. What it does is develop a formula where urban, like the metro area here, stays at the current rate level. If you get into rural or super rural, like a Redwood Falls or a Thief River Falls is super rural in the ambulance definitions, they would be paid different. Super rural gets a 22.6% bump on the base rate amount plus the mileage difference. For trips equal to 17 miles or less, and the average mile for all runs, I understand, is between about 12 and 15 miles. They get 150% increase of the mileage. And then for trips between 18 and 50, they get 125% of prospective mileage rates. So the idea is to capture the rural folks and try to get them more reimbursement for this type of work that they do to be able to cover their costs.
Are there questions? Okay, if not, then we'll take Deborah Welsh.
Slide up here just a little bit. Madam Chair, members of the committee, good morning. My name is Deborah Welsh. I'm with Health East Medical Transportation. And as Buck knows, being a provider in the Twin Cities, 11-county metro area, February of 08, we eliminated the STS broker for dispatching. And what that did is gave the customers the right to call us directly. We transport about 15,000 patients a year at Health East via wheelchair and ambulatory. And I believe by the elimination of the ATS dispatch broker in the 11-county metro area, I anticipate the same customer service and the same great service in the metro area that we received when STS brokering went away. The customer can have the choice to call the provider directly.
Are there any questions? Not. We'll take the opponents next, and we'll start with Jay McCloskey.
I think. Good morning, Madam Chair and Senators. My name is Jay McCluskey. I've worked with Representative Abler since 2003 on legislation for the non-emergency medical transportation. Some specifics, you have two handouts, one historical background regarding special transportation services, the other a chart based on data provided by DHS to Representative Abler. The revisers preparing for the House Policy Committee a delete all amendment that I drafted to address the issues with non-emergency medical transportation. I'm here today opposing Senate File 224 primarily because I believe that the Minnesota Non-Emergency Transportation Program, or MNET, is needed as the gatekeeper for ATS services in the metro area. I fully support prohibiting MNET from coordinating STS, which we had never intended when the program was developed in 2004, and from ATS in the non-metro counties. I also support the use of RUCA areas and increasing outstate reimbursements. I believe that not having MNET coordinate metro ATS will result in additional cost to the state due to four key factors. The most significant cost increases result from the characteristically different nature of determining recipients' level of need for different modes of transportation for STS versus ATS. STS level of need is fairly static. A recipient's physical or mental disability that results in their need for special transportation generally does not have significant improvement over time, with some exceptions due to temporary disabilities such as a broken leg or stroke, or specific disabling conditions such as multiple sclerosis. Determining what mode of transport is most appropriate for recipients who don't qualify is much more fluid and subject to trip-by-trip change. They may have a car if it runs or is insured and need fuel reimbursement. Other times they could take a bus or sometimes need an ATS vehicle. MNET is needed as the gatekeeper to ensure that recipients are directed to the lowest cost appropriate service on a trip-by-trip basis. This bill makes no provisions to establish who will begin determining whether recipients can get to medical services by bus pass or fuel reimbursement. It would qualify recipients to call. Actually, your bill does not. I don't believe there's another bill that qualifies recipients to call directly for an ATS vehicle who may otherwise have been able to lower the cost, may have been able to use a lower cost of transportation or mode of transportation for some trips if a gatekeeper had been called. So the first factor, resulting in cost increases, would result from a shifting of recipients who MNET now provides with bus passes or fuel reimbursements to an ATS vehicle. In 2008, there were 231,741 trips through MNET provided by bus pass or fuel reimbursement at an average cost of $3.79 per trip. There were 530,714 ambulatory ATS trips provided an average reimbursement of $18.14 per trip, or $14.35 more per trip. If 100,000 of these bus trips were to shift to ATS vehicles without a gatekeeper to ensure they're provided by lower-cost alternative whenever appropriate, the increased reimbursement would be $1.435 million per year. This alone would eat up most of the savings in payments to MNET. The second factor resulting in cost increases would be the shifting of administrative duties from MNET for determining the ATS level of need on a trip-by-trip basis and providing the bus passes and fuel reimbursement. The nature of ATS level of need is best done at the time of scheduling the ride, which this bill would not allow for. As a result, the shifting of many trips to ATS vehicles, as just described, would occur. Either DHS or each metro county would presumably take on this responsibility, and I would like you to note in the fiscal note, the department says that if DHS were to be prohibited from using a broker for ATS services, counties would have to assume the responsibility for managing those services, which would likely increase administrative costs for counties by an amount that is at least equal to the cost of current ATS brokering contract. They also indicate that eliminating the use of a broker is likely to reduce the access to ATS services for some medical assistance enrollees because counties may require clients to pay costs up front for services such as taxis. Some clients may not be able to pay for services up front and access will diminish. And that was the reason, the key reason we started the MNET program, as you will find referenced and described in the handout.
Mr. McCloskey, I'm going to just have to ask you to finish your testimony up. We're taking only limited testimony on the fiscal impacts of the bills before us today. And we are attempting to limit the testimony to 2 minutes each. I think you were advised of that.
I understand. I can finish this. I'll be testifying on your bill also, and I can address the third and fourth factor when we do that.
Senator Corn.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Is it McCloskey?
Yes, sir.
Mr. McCloskey, I'm just looking over your handout. I'm trying to figure out what connection you have, just for my own information. It says you're a registered lobbyist in 2003. What is your connection now with the special transport? Are you lobbying on their behalf or a registered?
I'm here officially as a citizen
Mr.
advocate.
Mr. McCloskey.
I'm not lobbying on behalf of anyone. I was asked by Representative Abler, who I've known for many years, to review this. I've had extensive background, you'll see, in many roles related to Metro Mobility and paratransit services, related to special transportation, and have been trying to find some way through this quagmire.
And Madam Chair.
Senator Corn.
Madam Chair and Mr. McCloskey, then you're here as a citizen advocate, but in looking at your paperwork here, it says that you're an insurance agent specializing in insurance for commercial transportation operations. So do you have any of these customers as your clients?
I do. I insure approximately 40% of the STS companies in Minnesota.
So,
Senator Corn.
So actually there is a connection then. You're actually insuring some of these clients rather than just being a citizen advocate.
And Mr. McCloskey.
And we'll continue insuring them with or without the MNET program. Realistically, the Senator Lynch's bill in allowing people to call ATS directly would be a boon for my business because we would have people crawling out of the woodwork to become ATS providers. Frankly, the limitation in the number of providers is not in my interest financially from a business perspective. My interest in this is trying to formulate some good policy that is represents the best interest of the state and recipients.
Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. McCloskey, how are the MNET providers paid? Are they paid on a per-call basis, so much per call? For handling the determination, or are they paid overall per call, and then from that amount they're paid per client, the amount that is paid for the transportation tax is deducted from that?
Senator Olson, I'm not sure that question should be best answered by Mr. McCloskey, but perhaps someone from the department would like to come forward and answer that question.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Chris Reiser from the Department of Human Services. Providers are paid a base rate and then a miles. So the MNET contract, you pay MNET on a per-trip basis. However, the providers are paid a base rate plus a mileage. And personal mileage is 20 cents per mile. The volunteer rate is the IRS rate.
Senator Olson.
So, Madam Chair, just so I'm clear then, if an MNET provider decided to give someone a bus ticket, for example, as opposed to putting them into a cab or arranging for some other mode of transportation, who gets to keep the difference in terms of the costs? Is it like a capitated system where MNET gets to keep part of that cost or that savings themselves, or does that cost get that savings get returned to the department?
Ms. Reistor.
Madam Chair, Senator Olson, we pay MNET on a per-trip basis. So there are instances, perhaps in bus token, where they make money on that particular trip. There are taxi rides that they're paid the provider more than we pay them, so they make money on some trips and they lose money on some trips.
Senator Olson.
Madam Chair, so it sounds like what we're dealing with then is a capitated system, and I think that's important because it seems to me then like there's a bit of a conflict of interest in making the determination if they're going to make more money by paying for rather than making an analysis in which they don't have a financial interest.
Senator Corin.
Madam Chair, thank you. And one more question for Mr. McCluskey. This is quite an extensive handout that you gave us. It says here in 2003 you were a registered lobbyist for Special Transportation Services. Were you an insurance agent at that time covering Special Transportation?
Mr. McCluskey.
Okay. All right.
All right, we will move on with our testimony. At this time, I'd like to call up Ron Jors. I would just remind testifiers to keep your comments to the bill that is before us. That's Senate File 224. Mr. Jors, welcome to the committee.
Madam Chairwoman and members, thank you for giving me the chance to speak with you today. I am an employee of Medical Transportation Management, which operates MNET. As you know, MNET currently contracts with the state of Minnesota to coordinate non-emergency medical transportation services for Twin City residents. My colleagues and I are responsible for ensuring that these vulnerable Minnesotans get to their doctor appointments safely, quickly, and in the most effective manner for taxpayers. Before joining MNET, I was working for 20 years in North Dakota, and I was a blackjack dealer. I made a lot more money working at a blackjack table than I do now connecting people with transportation providers, but I felt like there was something missing in my life. I felt that all I was doing was negative, and I was taking people's money and contributing to the problems in their lives. I left the casino and applied for many different jobs. Not one employer out here was willing to give me a chance except for one, and that was MNET. MNET believed in me. They believed that I had the talent to be able to do things, and I thank them every day. I've been with them for 3 years, and I can't thank them enough. I wake up every single day looking forward to going to work and serving. I'm here today to point out one troubling consequence that will occur if Senate Files 224 and 723 are passed into law, and services performed by me and my colleagues go away. Currently, Minnesotans served by MNET call one central phone number to request rides to their medical transportation appointments. My colleagues and I then call transportation providers to arrange the rides. In many instances, we have to make multiple phone calls before finding a provider who can make the trip. Now, keep in mind that these providers are on the road all day in multiple locations. Often, it's just not logistically possible for a provider to get to where we need to make to a certain time. Another provider must then be called. It's very, very common for us to make several calls to multiple providers before finding one that is available. Now, I can think of one instance in particular where I had to call 26 different transportation providers before finding one ride for a client. If MNET's work with the state ends, this will happen if Senate Files 224 and 723 pass. Minnesotans on medical assistance will have to call the transportation providers themselves to set up their own rides. Most of the people we serve are absolutely in no position to handle this themselves. They have physical or mentally challenging things that are going on in their lives, and this sudden change will cause incredible chaos in their lives. My colleagues and I at MNET provide a high level of customer service to these Minnesotans, and these individuals count on us every single day. Please don't take us away. Thank you for your time.
Senator Sharon, I'm just going to remind the additional testifiers that are coming forward that this is the finance division, and we are here to take testimony on the fiscal note and the fiscal implications of the bill before us today. And I will just suggest that this is not the appropriate venue for defense of any particular company or organization. And with that, I'll call forward Mahad Abelli. Mr. Abelli, please limit your testimony to the fiscal implications of the bill before us. Mr. Abelli.
Madam Chairwoman and members, it's Mahad Abdi, A-B-D-I. I am the president of Summit Transportation Company and a proud Senator Berglund's constituent. We are one of the many providers of medical transportation that work closely with MNET to provide safe and efficient doctor appointment rights for medical assistant recipients. My business has been in existence since 2007, and we've had a close working relationship with MNET from day one. MNET has been very helpful, professional, and good at what they do. In short, MNET holds medical transportation providers like me accountable. MNET inspects my vehicles, ensuring that they meet MnDOT requirements. They oversee our driver training, they track customer satisfaction, and they have a very thorough complaint resolution system set in place. Companies like mine know MNET is coordinating the work we do and always looking out for medical assistance recipients and taxpayers. This makes us providers better and pushes us to give nothing but superior service. Another important thing I must note is that most of my clients only speak Somali. Fortunately, they know they can call MNET to arrange their rights without a problem. When they call MNET, all they say is Somali, and an MNET representative takes it from there. If the valuable work MNET does suddenly goes away, which will happen if Senate files 224 and 723 are enacted, I fear for the future, not only for my business, but for the entire Somali community. We know nothing but MNET. Please keep MNET, their great employees, their due diligence, and their fairness in place. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Abdi. We have one additional testifier, Reverend Carol Hunt. Senator Sharon, it looks as if that concludes the testimony.
Madam Chair.
Senator Lurie.
I do know that as we talk about costs, and I know we didn't always focus on costs here, but I do know that the counties play a big role in where the costs go, and we didn't get a chance to hear the counties.
They're going
to
testify on
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we did get that perspective.
Senator Berglund, I'm sorry, I'm sort of thinking about, I would like to address this issue related to the rates being established in this bill, also in Senator Lynch's bill. What I said is that the counties could, that the provider could bill the state directly, but DHS has clarified that that in statute still remains a responsibility with the county. So I think that we need to hear that testimony from DHS.
All right. Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair, members, I wanted to clarify, Chris Reiser from the Department of Human Services, wanted to clarify the A6 amendment that puts rates for essentially their taxi rates into statute. By putting the rates into statute, it does not have the requirement that the counties reimburse
for
taxes.
Can you speak up a little louder?
I'm sorry.
Can people please take their conversations if they need to have them outside the room?
I wanted to speak to the A6 amendment that puts essentially taxi rides into statute, which also this is a slight a decrease in the rates that MNET is currently paying for taxi rides in the cities. That by putting the rates in statute, it does not remove the requirement that the counties reimburse for the taxi rides. For example, personal mileage rates, the 20 cents per mile is in statute, has been for many years. the county still reimbursed the personal mileage. And so if the intent is to have the state take over payment for ATS statewide or in a section of the state, there would be some other probably fiscal things happening with that type of a proposal.
That's what I had assumed when when that discussion was taking place, but I didn't see anything about it in Senator Lynch's fiscal notes, so thank you for clarifying that.
And there isn't anything in the language that changes what this the statute or what the requirements are for the counties. There's nothing in this language. It simply puts the rates into statute.
Okay.
So there's no fiscal impact.
So are there any other questions for Senator Sharon? All right, Senator Sharon, I think we should set your bill aside now so we can go to Senator Lynch's bill. Senator Lynch, you want to go ahead?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm here with Senate File 723, continuing some discussion on the non-emergency medical transportation services. Let me just say that we are talking about here today is taking a look at a service that we are obligated to provide and exploring the possibilities of providing that service in a different manner. Because simply put, members, we cannot afford to continue operation as normal in so many different areas of this division. I received my fiscal note less than an hour ago. And I want to say for the record, that is unacceptable. Unacceptable. I've been working on this issue for months. I have been in conversations with the department extensively. I have worked with Senate counsel at length. And at 8:30 this morning, I didn't have a fiscal note on this bill. So the fiscal note that appears before you is marked preliminary, thank goodness, because I have a number of questions, and this seems to be the not my preferred method, but I will have certainly the opportunity to pose some of those additional questions to the department. And if we could, I'm going to try to go through the fiscal note as best we can, particularly on page 4 of the fiscal note. And it goes through the various sections of the bill. Section 1, with regard to the notice requirements, the fiscal note is projecting a 5% increase in utilization resulting from the language in the bill. I'm okay with that because the whole reason that Section 1 is in the bill is because our focus in all of the work that Senator Sharon did with her work group and all of the many discussions that we have had over the last several months on this issue, frankly, the last several years, has been to focus on what is best for the clients that need these services. And one of the problems that we have heard about is this notice of being bumped off and thrown off and not having service, and we're attempting to address that in Section 1. Sections 2 and 4 have to do with level of need determination. This has been one of the most contentious, frustrating areas of this discussion. And as I said in the policy committee, and I'm going to repeat it here today because I think it is unacceptable, in all of the conversations that I've been involved with on this issue, I sit here today and tell you that I cannot tell you how level of need determinations are made. That, members, is a problem. In the fiscal note, it's being indicated that we have they expect a net increase equal to 16.7%. And I would just, as I'm sort of trying to analyze this, I'm not sure about the mechanism, the route and how they got there. I'm not sure if I'm necessarily agreeing with. But I would acknowledge that if there are more STS service levels that are needed, that might not be out of the realm of possibilities, because the system that is in place now, there is a financial incentive, frankly, to afford ATS services, and I think that we've seen that over time. I'm comfortable with the fact that there may be an increase in STS. I'm not so sure if it's at the rate that is being suggested here. Section 3, with regard to the quickest route, this is my personal favorite. What we are aiming to do there is to be transparent and accountable, so that if there is a ride from point A to point B in a particular city, that it is consistently 5 miles to that destination rather than 5 miles this week and 7 miles next week, or 5 miles with this employee and 8 miles with another one. So we are suggesting something really novel, like how about we use a software program that would have these mileage determinations in place. In Section 3 of the fiscal note, I'm being assessed a 20% increase. This is an area that we'll need to continue to work with the department on, because we've had this conversation previous to this, and in fact...
Senator Lynch, under your bill, my understanding is that the county would be making the determination of the level of need.
Senator Berglund, it may be the county. It could also be, starts on line 1.21 of the bill, and there are other individuals that might also be making level of need determination, such as your physician. Madam Chair, back to Section 3 on the quickest route. There was, in 2007, Senate File 570 addressed this particular component of the fiscal note, and at that time, there was a $0 assessment attributed to this. And so I think we need to do a little bit of work in that area. If you go back to page 1 of the preliminary fiscal note, one of the questions that I have, continue to have, and I hope that the department can fill in this blank for us today, is I think it would be helpful as we're trying to make some choices here in light of the budget situation we're in. I think it might be helpful if we knew how much in total we spend on ATS and STS services in this state through this division. So I'm hoping that we can get that number before us today. And an additional question that I have is, the preliminary fiscal note requires, you'll see, two additional FTEs. And so I'm looking for some clarification about what those FTEs will be doing. There are a number of individuals currently providing such services. It is unclear to me still at this date which employees are on the payroll of the broker and which and how many employees at the department are attributed or assessed to this work. So, Madam Chair, that's a lot of information, but as best I can tell. I don't know, Mr. Godfrey, if I've missed something or if you have anything that you think that I should add.
Madam Chair, members, I think that was a good summary of the fiscal note. I would just add some additional information that on page 2 under the bill description, it states that the two FTEs, I believe anyway from my reading of this, that the two FTEs are used by the department for the development of the new level of need assessment and scoring methodology. And it does, I believe, assume that those FTEs are on an ongoing basis, funded on an ongoing basis, and I'm a bit unclear about what duties they would be continuing to perform after that assessment and scoring methodology is developed, but perhaps the department can answer that question.
Madam Chair, Mr. Godfrey, thank you for that analysis. I would just say that if that's the case, then Senator Sharon had a really productive and quite fruitful work group, because I believe that, probably if we had just a couple of hours, I think we could come up with that methodology form and those few questions that need to be asked and have been involved with the department on that particular issue. So I think that's another area that we need to continue to refine in this preliminary fiscal note.
Are there any questions of Senator Lynch?
Madam Chair.
Senator Erickson Ropes.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Lynch, on Section 3 on the quickest route, when we were in Senator Marty's committee, there was a question about the quickest route, whether the quickest means the shortest or if there happens to be obstacles along the way, or, how are we going to get to that definition? And then if there happens to be an exception to the rule, let's say the software calculates the quickest route, and you go there and there's road construction or something in the way, are those people still going to have an opportunity to be paid because it's going to take them longer than the software said?
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson Ropes.
Senator Lynch.
I will yield to Mr. Widener to address that.
Madam Chair, Senator Erickson Ropes, Michael Widener, the Executive Director of the Minnesota Paratransit Providers Association. Currently, what will happen is in your computer program, you can select quickest route or most direct. What happens is the quickest route actually gets you there the quickest. The most direct may take you down city streets and through traffic. By utilizing quickest route, it will enable the providers to provide more services on a daily basis. Some of you who may be familiar with Minneapolis, one of the quickest routes may be to go down Lindale Avenue from Richfield. However, that is nonstop congestion and traffic lights, when in reality what you do is you get on 35W and you make yourself your way down to downtown Minneapolis. So what this does is it encourages efficiency.
Other questions, Senator Erickson Ropes?
Madam Chair, I don't know that I understand that, though, because when it comes to paying this provider, are they going to be allowed some exceptions like that? I'm still not real clear, and if we're putting language into the bill that says quickest, it does say quickest route. And what does quickest mean, by time or by distance?
The quickest route is by time. What happens is by utilizing a commercially acceptable software package, what this will also do is it will help the surveillance at the Department of Human Services, because what you're going to do then is you can tell them, This is the program we use, and these are how we've calculated our distances. So it helps to enable the Department of Human Services to easily audit the trip from where they're located right now.
Right. Madam Chair, and I think if
I can just interrupt you a minute here. I understand you'd like to get paid for the additional miles you drive if you're going the quickest route. But in my mind, there isn't any reason why you couldn't be paid the same miles that would have been paid if you went the most direct route. And then if you're going the quickest route, you can do that. And if you're picking up more rides, you could just get paid for more rides. I mean, that seems to me the most logical way to deal with this issue.
Mm-hmm. And Madam Chair, in terms of the audit or the department being able to track that, and I agree, but is there a way on the software they will be able to say, oh, well, we ran into a car accident that just happened, and we had to, you know, take a separate route, and they say, well, we had you track in here, you went all the way around this neighborhood.
Madam Chair, Senator Ropes, through a program, there is that ability to make that change if you need to. That is something that is provided and provides that flexibility. What we understand is currently there is no utilization for some sort of standard mechanism. What you're taking is the most direct route, and what the department actually pays is whatever the mileage, the actual mileage that you submit, and that means if you got lost and had to make a U-turn or something, you can include that currently in your mileage. By utilizing a service, a commercially adopted software, that takes that factor out of it. I mean, it's really, how do you get from point A to point B without the human error?
Senator Olson?
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I was just thinking that I would agree with you that it seems to me like if you have a set number of miles, and then if it turns out that it's more efficient for you to use a different, so that you can take more rides, that there would be a financial incentive to do that, rather than complicating the system that we have right now. Or I guess it just seems like that allows you the latitude to still go the quickest route if you chose to do that. It's just otherwise we would be increasing costs rather than having something that would be cost neutral.
Okay, Senator Lynch, you have a blank appropriation for the counties in your bill, and I think it would be helpful if you could tell us what you've planned to fill in those blanks with.
Madam Chair.
Since we need to fiscal note that part of this also.
I was hoping before I got here today that I would have the fiscal note, because I'm intending to appropriate, pay for that with a portion of the savings that are incurred by doing this. And so that's why
I can also just remind you and Senator Lynch that when we combine your two bills, there are no savings at this point in time. And so that was the ultimate goal here of our division this year, is to get savings to balance the budget.
And Madam Chair, I am very committed to that end, particularly in regard to this issue. And I think that I've noted a couple of areas in the preliminary fiscal note that we have today that we're going to keep, we need to keep working on, because.
Right. Well, we need to be able to set these two bills aside today. And if you need to keep working on it, that's fine. But we need to have some idea what you intended to fill in the blanks with, so that when we set it aside, we have some idea then how much that part of it was going to cost.
Understandably so, Madam Chair. For the record, the counties under this proposal would have the opportunity to provide that level of need assessment, and it was the desire of the author and many of us in this room to, with recognition of that, that we think that is more appropriately where that level of need assessment could take place. The bill also indicates that it's not an exclusive to the counties. But I only wanted
I have a little bit of concern about that, Senator Lynch, because we could get into the same thing that we have with PCA right now, where everybody's doing something and wherever they can get the best level of need determination is where they'll go. So if we are going to do level of need determination by the counties, it would seem to me it would make more sense for them to be doing it all the time.
Madam Chair, in whatever way we choose to move forward on this issue, I think that it's prudent that we, note whatever changes are potentially being made and then come back and revisit them, because I think part of the frustration in trying to work through this, frankly, has been the lack of good data and information to be able to make assessments about, has this been helpful or hasn't it been helpful, and has this done what we wanted it to do or hasn't it? And so hopefully we can do a better job of doing that. Just from a real practical standpoint, I saw just too many examples, and I saw them widespread, where individuals were being denied services, with a face-to-face level of need assessment, a local level of need assessment, that never would have happened. I am convinced of it. Never would have happened. And while I am pleased and I will commend the department on each and every one of those examples, and they were from many of our Senate districts, in all cases where it was brought to the department's direct attention from a senator that there was a concern with a client being denied service, in all of those cases, that situation was rectified. That's a good thing, but that should not be the mode of operation.
All right, Senator Lynch, I'd like to move on if we could take your testifiers.
Madam Chair, I'll yield to Michael Widener.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Michael Widener. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Paratransit Providers Association. I think one of the things that Senator Lynch's bill does is try to address some of the financial issues that are out there, and including specifically to address the issue of permitting county social workers to make the determination. That was, I think, based on conversations from the counties, some county social workers who said currently the broker receives either $25 or $75 an assessment. We can do that assessment when we see the person, and the state can save that $25 to $75. That was the impetus for the county social worker being permitted to do this. And so that was created as a suggestion in one of the individuals that can do this. Senator Olson, with respect to your concerns regarding the mileage and the quickest route, the language in this bill is based upon language that was included in Senate File 570 from years ago and the zero fiscal note that was received from that by the Department of Human Services. This is the first time today that I saw this change, so it may require something to be looked at. But the language is identical to what was included in Senate File 570 2 years ago, and that had no financial impact. So that's why it was included here today. With respect to the savings that should be obtained through Senator Lynch's bill, currently the broker gets $21.09 for whatever the ride is. It's a capitated rate. And as Senator Olson pointed out, if an individual is given a bus token, the broker keeps that money. Also, on an ATS ride, on a taxi ride, currently the average ride is approximately less than eight miles in the metro area, which means the provider gets less than $15 and the broker keeps $6 per ride. It is from that $6 a ride, there's about 80,000 rides a month. That's $480,000 a month in savings that would not have to be paid out to the broker. Those are costs which I believe are recaptured in Senator Lynch's bill, and our savings, which are attributable to her bill. Additionally, by placing the burden back upon the providers to ensure that the destination is a medical appointment, to and from a medical appointment, that should also provide an additional savings. I think you will see in one of the graphs that had been provided by Mr. McCloskey that in fiscal year 2004, there was a $5 million savings in the industry. That $5 million savings occurred before the broker ever came here, and that those savings are attributable to the STS industry coming forward and saying, one, we want a chain of custody document which will ensure where the doctor signs and says, we have received this individual. Two, that the level of needs are performed more appropriately. And so by utilizing and putting the burden back upon the ATS provider, because right now the ATS provider has no burden to ensure that it's a proper medical destination. They just deliver the person and that's it. They have no responsibility from that point on. So by eliminating the broker and putting the burden back on the ATS provider, the ATS provider has to ensure it's a medical appointment. And that should eliminate runs to the Urban League, to certain churches. You know, those aren't medical destinations. So we would also don't believe that that savings is recaptured in the fiscal note. So there should be additional savings there.
Any questions? Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Senator Lynch or Mr. Widener, without having a broker or coordinator, is there some review? Will there be some review of the program to make sure that the services are being met and that there are no issues about?
Well, I think her bill calls for a redetermination every 6 months by the county.
Statute, Madam Chair.
Her bill does that.
Madam Chair and Senator Rosen, the bill does call for that, and I was trying to coordinate it with eligibility requirements, just trying to be efficient and not create an additional stop or additional layer. And also in Section 1 of the bill deals with the appeal process as well. That's in place.
Senator Berglund.
Senator Sharon.
Would you repeat your question, Senator Rosen? I just wanted to make sure I understood the question. Was it related to SDS or ATS service?
Well, Madam Chair, thank you. Actually, it was to both, Senator Sharon, because I am just to make sure that the law, when this is passed, is providing the services that need to be done without the broker and the coordinator. I want to make sure that there is a review or some stopgap.
Senator Berglund, I would just say I didn't have a chance to say this before, is that when you're talking about these various services, one of the things that you need to know is that the brokering of the ATS services is in the 11-county area, not in the rural area. So you can see that it occurs without a broker system in the majority of the state. So it does occur. People do get the service. They're capable of making those calls. And at least in the portion of the bill that relates to ATS services, elimination of the broker, we acknowledge that some of the nice things that might come with one call number or those services that are provided by the broker go away, but in exchange for turning over the responsibility again to the consumer for arranging for their own ride. We also heard the testifier saying that there'll be more providers perhaps, so there'll be more choice, more access to rides. And in exchange for that, we have cost savings that we'll be able to pay for RUCA and be able to pay for other needs, at least in that bill, for within our division here for Health and Human Services.
Okay, I'd like to take the opponents now. Mr. Jay McCloskey, if you have any new comments to make.
Yes, ma'am.
Madam Chair and Senators, with regard to the elimination of MNET as a gatekeeper for the ATS program, there would be two other key factors that would result in increased cost to the state. In particular, the increased opportunity for recipients to misutilize ATS vehicles. It's much more effective to screen a destination when the call comes into a centralized call center than to have surveillance utilization review catch misutilization after the fact. The current proposal to control this by having the recipient sign a trip verification form isn't effective. Having the recipient who intends misutilization sign a form to verify trip is like asking the fox to watch the henhouse. While there have been concerns for the validity of some destinations, even with calls coming into MNET call center, this can only be expected to increase with calls going directly to providers. While ATS drivers could catch destinations that weren't really medical facilities and the provider could discontinue service to that recipient as a result, the recipient would be free to call any of many other ATS unsuspecting or any of many other unsuspecting ATS providers. The fourth factor is the need for increased reimbursement for ATS providers above that now paid to offset their increased administrative costs resulting from recipients calling them directly instead of MNET, and they're having to bill each individual trip to DHS versus batch billing to MNET. You'll note in the spreadsheet titled Comparison of Common Carrier Rates that the reimbursement for the average 8-mile trip in the metro area for an ATS vehicle versus taxi averages $6.35 less for the ATS vehicle than the prevailing rate now for the in the metro area for taxis. You could not get taxis to provide this service for the cost paid to ATS providers due to the pay rate alone, much less so in their having to deal with additional time and expense billing DHS or the county for each trip, reconcile issues of remittance advices for trips not paid when first submitted. The bill that I have drafted that is being reviewed in the House Policy Committee proposes eliminating the capitated structure for payment to MNET. I fully agree that this does provide incentive. Whether it is actually happening or not, there is at least the on the surface an incentive for downcoding or for people to be inappropriately classified at a lower level of need. And the system that I proposed is the original reimbursement structure, which was a cost of service plus fee. So we would have for the average cost now of the ATS or the bus or mileage reimbursement is $3.89. You add to that a fee. The fee that they had most recently was $5. We would have an $8.89 charge. We would result in a savings of approximately $2 million with that provision alone.
And we are getting that fiscal noted by the department also, that idea. We don't have it back yet. So
no, we don't, Madam Chair.
We're asking for it.
The most significant savings from reclass was indeed, as you look at the graph and the reduction in 2004 and 2005, was indeed from the reclassifying of recipients who had previously qualified for STS because of the physician statement of need, who indeed were capable of using a taxi level or taxi type of service because the system was dysfunctional. A point of clarification also in the average trip length, and I've misstated it also. I've been calling it an average trip. 2008, there were a little over 530,000 ATS trips and just over 5 million miles paid for the metro ATS. So the average trip length in the metro area is actually just under 10 miles, not 8 miles. And so these costs that I have cited would, and the differentials would be a little bit larger. I believe that MNET, referring to the fiscal notes, I do understand that this is a preliminary note on Senator Lynch's bill. We don't have the preliminary note on Senator Sharon's bill. And again, I would like to stress
we
the fact
we have a final fiscal note on her bill.
I'm sorry?
We have a final fiscal note on
right.
her bill.
And again, and what they both are doing in common is eliminating MNET. And what I would like to stress that they put into eliminating MNET in terms of dispatching of any ATS or STS. And so in the fiscal note that is not preliminary, I'd like to point out again, I think it's a critical piece of information, that they say it would likely increase administrative costs for counties by an amount that is at least equal to the cost of the current ATS brokering system. We're truly not saving money. We're simply shifting it. And the reality is the money that's shifted to the counties ends up being reimbursed back by the Department of Human Services. If you look at their information and their charts for the cost of service, which is all included in this chart, administrative costs borne, and I didn't have an opportunity to add it up, but the administrative costs for ATS by the non-metro counties are a fairly substantial amount of money. And for, by the department's own estimation, would equal the cost now paid to DHS and result also in the their concern that we would have, hang on, that we eliminate the use of brokers likely to reduce access to ATS services, which would also, it has been demonstrated, result in increased use of emergency of services, going to emergency rooms versus routine doctors or doctor visits, use calling ambulances instead of calling a taxi level service or having a bus pass readily available. So I do believe that there is some real value in the MNET program, and there are ways to save money. And by changing from the capitated rate to the fee for service plus fee, we would be able to achieve approximately $2 million in savings based upon the number of trips currently provided.
Thank you. Question, Senator Olson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, Madam Chair, I don't sit on the Health Policy Committee, so I'm not as familiar with the background of this as some of the people who sit here. But to me, just hearing a $5 fee for a $3 bus ticket points out to me the inappropriateness of paying that level of management for that level of cost. We're paying almost double to decide if someone gets a bus ticket than what a bus ticket would actually cost. And so just backing away from this, I think what I'm hearing, the way I'm understanding this, is that there has to be a determination whether someone's even entitled to this service to begin with before they would qualify for it. In other words, I can't call and say, call MNET, because someone at the county level has had to decide that I would have the right to that service before I could utilize it. So what we're asking simply is just that at the same time that's being done, there be a decision what level of service I would be qualified for by someone who doesn't have a financial incentive to make the decision one way or another and is doing a hands-on, face-to-face determination. And I would think you could certainly do that a lot more cost-effectively than to more almost double your cost for a bus ticket every time you're utilizing that service. And I would have to say, Mr. McCloskey, just without going through and addressing every point you made, that you're kind of mixing things a bit here, because when you're talking about cost, you're assuming everybody's taking a taxi ride, but that's not really what's happening, because a lot of these people are taking bus tickets, and so you're assuming the highest level of costs on one hand, and then the savings, when you're talking about what you can save, you're assuming the lowest level of costs. So I don't think you're really doing an accurate fiscal analysis of how this MNET process is costing and saving in comparison to what's being proposed.
So I would take that as a statement rather than a question. Senator Lynch?
Madam Chair, in my final statement, I want to be clear that this bill is not about eliminating MNET. This bill is about eliminating a broker-delivered system. This bill is about providing better service for Minnesotans, and it is my intent to absorb some savings along the way. And I think if we continue.
Okay, we have another person to testify against the bill, Senator Lynch, Patricia Caldwell.
Madam Chair, may I respond briefly to Senator Olson?
No.
Okay.
Madam Chair and members, Patricia Coldwell, Association of Minnesota Counties. I think you've heard a number of things about the county concerns, and I'm really going to mention more sort of concerns that we have about the bills and then the direction that they're going. We do really appreciate that both of the authors of these bills have been very patient and very persistent on trying to work with everyone on the concerns that we have and trying to get to a point where we're delivering the service more effectively. The concern that we have had about the time required by counties to complete the level of need determination will be addressed if the appropriation is adequate for it, and so we need to just continue to work with Senator Lynch on figuring out what that is. Without really knowing the questions that there are going to be in the level of need determination, it's really difficult for us to say whether this can be done by a county financial worker, a county social worker, whether it would need to be a public health nurse, and that really is a factor in the cost of this. So we don't really have a statement about whether counties should be responsible for the level of need determination. We're just saying that it really should be financed. The question about eliminating the broker model in the metro area for ATS services is obviously the one that, when you look at a $5 million fiscal note that the department is estimating will come down to counties, really does give us pause. Obviously, that's not a cost that we feel that we can afford to absorb. And we did talk to Senator Sharon yesterday about some of the concerns, the way some of those concerns could be addressed by having the department responsible for taking care of some of the contracts with the providers and kind of fronting the money, so counties wouldn't have to necessarily give people money for a taxi ride or a bus token up front. They could just give them a list of, here are the taxi cabs that you're authorized to take that we have contracts with, and here is the bus schedule and all of that kind of thing. That would probably help if the department were willing to take that on. I think that would alleviate some of the workload for the counties. I think the one thing I want to point out is what I'm sort of seeing as a potential, I guess I'd say a cycle here, and that we moved into a centralized model several years ago in order to save money, and now we're seeing some concerns perhaps with access to services and then provider rates, and so we're wanting to address that by decentralizing and kind of moving the functions to, I guess, a different level of government or a different level in the community. And what we probably will end up seeing over time is then more inconsistency in the kind of services that we have, both in the level of need determination and in how much work the county is able to do. I mean, I think we're asking the county, as we have with the broker, to be in kind of a combination of a gatekeeper function of, here's your bus ticket, find a ride, but at the same time recognizing some people who are on medical assistance are not very well positioned to just do that. So in order to get them the best access, some of the counties may want to go the extra mile on providing the services, but we'll probably do that at their own cost. So I can see us here in a few years having advocacy groups saying, whoa, it's done differently from one county to another. Let's all do it at the highest level. And so we end up with either counties having to assume more costs or the state having to move into funding the service at a higher level. So just kind of an observation of where I kind of could see this going in the future. And we need to decide if we're wanting to trade off a level of consistency that we have now for potentially addressing some of the issues that you're seeing. So I guess those are just my comments at this point.
So, Ms. Cadwell, don't most of the people that use the transportation services already have the county making a determination of their level of need for other things already?
And they do, through their case management function.
Right, mm-hmm. And under the governor's bill, that would be even more
centralized.
There would be one tool that would be used, but it would be more, you'd be doing more of that.
Are you referring to PCA, mm-hmm. Senator? Yeah. I think
and
one
nursing
of the
home level of service. Mm-hmm. And
one of the challenges that we have right now is that if somebody's on a waivered program, those functions are performed by either public health nurse or social worker. And if they're receiving PCA, that assessment is done by the public health nurse. And so we probably would need to put those two pieces together. The compass form that the department is looking at could potentially have some transportation questions added to it. Maybe it already does. I don't know then if anybody who comes in for transportation has to do the full compass assessment, but that would be one thing to be aware of.
Well, at any rate, it is, if we're looking for efficiencies, if you're making a level of determination of need for other healthcare services, it would make sense to, because you're looking at the same problems that the individual has in terms of determining their level of need for transportation services as well.
Yep.
And so I think that's the thought here is can we provide this determination of level of need more efficiently?
Mm-hmm. And I think that's a possibility. It just depends on how comprehensive the assessment tool would be and how much of an added workload that is for staff.
Senator Berglund.
Senator Sharon.
Thank you. I want to challenge you to a question that I've always addressed you before, because I think when you're talking about counties, we have to separate the fact that the rural counties already do not have a broker system for the ATS services. We're talking about 11 county metro area that has this broker service, not the rest of the state. And ATS services under that system are functioning. And so when you're talking about counties, I think you have to be very careful to understand that we're not talking about all the counties. The counties in the rural part of the state are managing and functioning, and the service is fine, and people are getting where they need to go, and they're arranging their own rides. And so the clarity about that, I don't think people should get confused about that.
Madam Chair and Senator Sharon, I appreciate that. You're right. And I need to get more information. I've heard from Metro Counties that this is a fairly big concern for them. I just need to get more information about how much work they think this would be in comparison to what the situation was before this model went into effect.
And, you know, I guess the question is a fair question then. How much fraud and abuse does the department think there is in the rural areas in terms of providers taking people to places they're not authorized to take them to or charging more mileage than they should, et cetera. And I don't think we've ever really heard an answer to that question. Senator Olson?
Madam Chair, I don't know if this is too far afield in terms of a suggestion, but, you know, we have cards that we use now for people for buying groceries. Why would it be so difficult to incorporate into that same card a code to be able to use on a bus or use for something and then have it verified when you get to the hospital provider so that there's a just kind of a built-in, I mean, is that?
Well,
that
I have a feeling that's much more difficult and complicated and costly than you can imagine. Senator Rosen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. We were just wondering if this issue, special transportation, is on the legislative auditor's list. If we could request that.
I don't know.
You checked it?
I don't know the answer to that question. You might want to check in with Ann Rest. Senator Lynch?
Madam Chair, Senator Rosen, the Office of the Legislative Auditor just recently sent out information to members on possible selection of topics, and this is one of those areas that was offered as something that they may choose to look at. And so I would encourage members to think seriously about asking the Legislative Auditor's Office to assist in that regard.
So any more questions for Ms. Cadwell? Thank you very much. Then, Senator Lynch, we need to lay this over then, and you can keep working on your fiscal note and let us know how you're coming on it.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I look forward to the conversations.
And with that, the meeting will be adjourned.